Go to buywithrob.com today.
Today we're going to be talking about the mitzvah known as tzitzit, which typically translates itself as fringes. The Torah says that when you wear a four-cornered garment, or a garment that has more than four corners, but a minimum of four corners on a garment, there's a requirement to tie strings or fringes in a very, very specially prescribed manner. And those fringes are supposed to be visible, and their purpose is to serve as a reminder, so that we might always be cognizant of our mission, of our purpose on earth, and that we may live according to the dictates of the Torah.
Hello?
Podcast of verbal narcissism for ugly journalists.
Hello, can I talk to Mr. David? Dave Allman?
Approach and identify.
Hello?
And the message of the Talit is that we wrap ourselves in holiness. And when we begin our prayers, we prepare by donning an additional mitzvah or stepping into a more spiritual frame of mind.
Man, battle station's missile.
Chief of Watch, sound the general alarm.
From the Buy With Rob studio, located in beautiful Silverdale, Washington, this is the Dave Bowman Show. Now, here is your submarine qualified, well-coffeed, stuffy, elitist history buff host, Dave Bowman.
Initiating fire.
Well, good morning, good evening, or good afternoon, wherever you are, whatever you do. A lot of things happening in the world today. Most of them are far beyond our control, you might say. So perhaps it's time we took a pause and thought about life and thought about the laws of gravity. Sit-sits. Civility. Chivalry. Sexual misconduct. The Second Civil War. Politics and or the news. Don't touch that dial. Just try to hear me out for a while. Do you know why we wear the zitzits? The same reason that Mike Pence does what he does, and it's becoming obvious that more and more people are worried about it. The political right seems to think that we are headed for a second civil war. Are we? A lot of things going on today, so let's get this Tuesday started. Here's how you get a hold of me. The text machine, area code 209-565-DAVE. It's 209-565-3283. Email is dave at thedavebowmanshow.com. And of course, we're on the web. Just look for The Dave Bowman Show on Facebook, Twitter, iTunes, and whatever web browser you use will take you to thedavebowmanshow.com. E loqui cognitio, the greatest enemy of knowledge is not ignorance. It is the illusion of knowledge. Many things happening today, some changes you may notice, particularly if you're watching the video. Not so much if you're on the podcast side, but with the radio side. The video has changed, and so today is the first day we're using it. We ran some extensive tests over the last few days, including yesterday. Think we have it dialed in? I don't know for sure. But if weird things happen, then weird things will happen. But I think we have it. I think we have it dialed in, and that's good. One of the hazards, though, of this system is that there is a significant delay. So what you're actually seeing on the video is significantly behind where I am. How far, kind of, I can't tell you, because I think I know, but I don't actually know. It's kind of like being on radio again. You know, we used to operate with a 15-second delay. Some of the syndicated shows, I know Rusty Humphrey's show used to operate on a minute and a half delay, and I don't, you know. That's why they always say, turn down your radio when you call a radio show, because you're on a delay. And if your radio's on and you're on the phone, you're going to hear weird things and weird echoes. And anyway, so that's there. So we're running this today to see if it works. I mean, we ran a test last night, a pretty significant test last night, and it seemed to work fairly well. It's just something that I've always wanted to do. I left YouTube because YouTube is just completely unstable. It just couldn't support what I was trying to do. It's a great platform for sharing a video that you've recorded, but for live stuff, it's just not up to and touching. It just really isn't. I know they say they are, but they're really not. Facebook Live seemed to have this. I had a long conversation with my good buddy, Brian Brody. Brian, if you're listening, hope you're feeling a lot better. Anyway, I had a long conversation with him about it. And, you know, if you've ever seen his setup, you know that he has a pretty fancy dancy setup that costs literally thousands of dollars that I neither have, but if I did, I wouldn't want to invest in that. So it took a while to find a software solution to a hardware problem. And now we think we've got it. And you're seeing the end result of that today. And I'm hoping that this works really well. I hope that it sounds good. I hope that it comes across well. And if it doesn't, well, we'll junk it and go to something else. But for the time being, this will allow me to do some things that I've always wanted to do that are more, you know, video production type stuff. I know it's a radio show and a podcast, but the consultant that I paid way more money than I should have last year, 2 years ago now. God, has it been that long? It's been 2 years, I guess. Dave, you got to do video. You got to do video. Everything in the 21st century is video. People don't listen to radio. People don't listen to podcasts, which is complete BS. He's completely wrong about that. But he's not wrong about the video aspect of things. He's not wrong about that. So we all have to kind of do videos. And quite frankly, it also gives me the opportunity to learn some of this technology for use in our real estate business as well, which we need to do and grow. And so, you know, we're having fun, I guess, is what it comes down to. It may cause me to push some buttons incorrectly. You may see some more errors on a technical side than you're used to. Because with Facebook Live, you just turn it on and you talk, and that's pretty much it. That's the end of it. But with this, I've got to do some control things, so I have yet an extra layer of windows open here to control things. And, you know, you learn this stuff, and you get good at it on the radio side of things. You get good at pushing buttons and going to, you know, doing things, and it becomes second nature after a while. And I've kind of gotten that way with the radio control side of things, but now I have to be my own video director too. You know what I need? I need a producer. That's what I need. Where's Kevin or John when you really need them? The good old days. The other problem that I'm having today, and you may notice it on a couple of occasions, like that one, is I'm having some serious problems with my voice today and breathing. I've long suffered from, well, when I first noticed it back in the day, I didn't have a name for it, but in the 80s and 90s, they named it gastroesophageal reflux disease. Most people would just call that heartburn, but it's a little more serious than that. You know, everybody has heartburn once in a while. There was a time prior to 1993 where basically I had heartburn 24/7, and that was my life. I mean, I would eat a bottle of Tums every couple of days, and just trying to go through, it's in all my medical records and everything else, so I'm covered there. But turns out that what I have is a problem with my lower esophageal sphincter, a congenital defect, so it doesn't close properly, which means that if you know anything about how heartburn is caused, that's constantly going. Well, they make a medication called Prilosec, which is wonderful. And I'm not shilling for Prilosec, but Prilosec saved my life. I mean, it really did. I remember the first night I had taken it. And for the first time in my life, I woke up in the middle of the night without heartburn. And it was amazing. It was a medical miracle. Prior to that, I don't remember a time when I didn't have heartburn. I mean, I just don't. My earliest childhood memories are heartburn. Anyway, of course, that's burning the crab wood. What I found out in 1993 is this has basically destroyed my lower esophagus. I have, at the time, I had severe erosive esophagitis. I had GERD. They thought I had Barrett's esophagus. They were prepping me for esophageal cancer, all of these markers and everything. And the Prilosec made a huge difference. And then some lifestyle changes. Nothing big, but, you know, the biggest one is not eating before you go to bed. And sometimes that's hard. But anyway, long story short, occasionally I had gone through experiences where I would aspirate on the reflux. Now, for those of you that don't speak English, that means that you would inhale. You're literally drowning on your own stomach acid. And it is one of the most painful and frightening experiences you will ever go through. The worst one that ever happened was the night of Princess Diana's funeral. I say night of because I was in America and it was nighttime here and daytime there. But that night, I had no intention of watching the funeral, but I was up all night because I was essentially drowning. I thought I was going to die that night. I really did. And actually, there have been a couple of people that I know experienced this, and it caused problems for them. Reggie White, the great great defensive lineman for the Memphis Showboats and later the Green Bay Packers and the Philadelphia Eagles, he had this condition. He didn't specifically die of this. He specifically died of a cardiac arrhythmia, but it was probably brought on by panicking over this. There was a Modesto Nuts player some years ago. I believe they were the Modesto A's at the time, who had the same problem and ended up having a cardiac arrest. So every time it happens, I get a little, there are things that I have to do. So of course this happens last night. It's first time probably in 4 years that it's happened. And I was surprised because I hadn't really eaten anything of significance since about 5 o'clock. And we went to bed close to 10, I guess. And I woke up at 11, searing pain in my throat and just hacking and coughing. And so it commenced the emergency procedures that we do for that. And a couple hours later, I was able to actually go back to bed. But in the meantime, as you can hear, my throat has been burned raw and it does affect my voice. Otherwise, I feel fine, but I do have a little bit of a problem breathing because there's still some of that crud down in my lungs, which means I got to get it out because otherwise you develop pneumonia, in which case then you got to go to the hospital. And anyway, point of all this is that I'm not feeling great and I'm testing new equipment. And otherwise, I would have just said, screw it, and I would have taken the day off. But I really wanted to run this test with this full up test. This is what we call an Apollo 8 mission here, where we take the new system and we actually use it to see if it works. And hopefully everything will go fine and my voice will hold up and we will go on our way. Okay. All that as introduction to what I really want to talk about today, which is, of course, culture in general. I guess we could talk about politics, but I don't know. Am I going to change anybody's mind? No. Probably not going to change anybody's mind on culture, but I've observed some things that cause me to stop and think. There are a lot of people. The LA Times actually some years ago, when was this? This was last year, April of 2017, ran an article about the vice president, Mike Pence, and the fact that Mike Pence has a rule, which is that he is never, ever alone with a woman who is not his wife. And there's a lot of people who were mocking him for this. There are a lot of people who were mad at him for this. There are a lot of people who nodded their heads and went, yeah, that makes sense. It's actually called the Billy Graham rule. I don't know if you knew that or not. Billy Graham is actually the person that has sort of instituted this rule and sort of made it so that things would, excuse me, sorry, told you this was going to happen. Billy Graham was the guy that instituted this rule. And of course, a lot of people, including the New York or the Los Angeles Times, reacted to this as sexist. This is mean because women are equal to men. And so consequently, when men refuse to be alone with women who are not their wives, the message they're sending is that you're not equal to me and blah, blah, blah. Which, of course, I don't know that that is the message. I had the same rule when I worked in a place where I was in an office, and some of you don't know this, but I spent 20 years in nonprofit management and HR management, financial management. I'm actually an accountant. I don't like accounting. I don't like to do accounting. I'm not going to do it anymore, but I was trained in it. At any rate, I had the same rule. And on occasion, there would be times when women would have to come to my office for whatever reason. And I always told people, you know, don't come in here by yourself. And if you do, the door's open. And my assistant, who was a, you know, in the office next to me always had specific instructions as to what she was supposed to do if that happened. And if she wasn't available, my rule was we would get up and go to the conference room and open up all the doors and windows and everything else. So I had the same rule. I know that many pastors have the same rule. Many youth pastors now. I mean, there was a time when you could take kids home and you'd have one guy drive a van or a bus or something and take kids home from church or Sunday school or whatever. Can't do that anymore. The liability risk alone is significant enough that churches and organizations such as Boys and Girls Clubs and Girl Scouts and Boy Scouts and that sort of thing, they won't take on that liability anymore. So now we've seen the Billy Graham rule actually move into the realm of insurance and liability where, you know, if you don't have these rules in place and one of your employees violates them, you could be held, your business could be held liable for the behavior of your employee, which usually happens anyway. But if at least you have the rules, you can at least train people and say, don't do that. And then when they don't do that, then you can terminate them if necessary, but correct them in any particular case. But at any rate, the LA Times ran this article and in April of 2017 was highly critical of the vice president for his Billy Graham role, for his archaic, chivalristic rule about not being alone with people of the opposite sex. This is the 21st century, so you almost have to say that now. But of course, nowadays, it's like, how would I know? Why am I assuming somebody's gender, right? Anyway, point being that they were very critical of the fact that he was doing this. And now we watch in culture where there's this reaction now where memes are making their ways around and people are saying these kinds of things. And my wife this morning actually came in wanting to talk to me about a discussion she had had at work or post work. I'm not clear with some of her nursing buddies about, you know, how these things are handled and why these things are handled this way. And she wanted to know, you know, what we should do with Ben. How do we tell Ben to avoid these situations, these kinds of scenarios where something literally becomes your word against my word or my word against your word? And it's a complicated mess. And that's part of the problem is that instead of looking at Mike Pence and saying, well, that's his choice, we instead as a culture turn that into, you can't do that because you're discriminatory. If you do that, you are being mean to women. You are disrespecting women if you do that. And I guess I don't agree with it, but I guess there's an argument that could be made to that effect. I don't agree with that argument. I think that argument is badly flawed because it signifies a cultural shift in which we have changed our ideas about, well, we haven't changed our ideas, but we've begun to mock the old ideas about how men and women should interact and interplay in that. And of course, this was brought again to mind by my other reading last night. I know people are surprised by this, but especially people who are close to me, because I get a lot of crap from my very close friends about, well, you're not a very good Jew. You're not. I had one the other day said, I don't know if he's religious or atheist. I can't tell. And I said this then. I'm neither. I just have a lot of questions. But I do my appropriate study, and I do my readings and the likes of that. And of course, one of the readings was about the laws regarding what we call the tzitzit, the fringes on the garments. And it's one of those things that you read in Leviticus, and the whole book of Leviticus, most people read, and they just sort of go, thou shalt not, thou shalt. And most of what people take from Leviticus is the laws of kashrut or kosher foods. You can't eat this. You can't eat that. And somehow or another that has turned into, if I eat shrimp, I'm going to hell. It's not what it says. And people miss that. People don't understand what the whole purpose of kashrut is. They don't understand the whole purpose of the talit. They don't understand the purpose of the fringes on there. And there's a story that's told about a young man who was wearing his, what we call the little talit, which is the four-cornered garments that has the fringes on it. I don't happen to have one. And I'll tell you why. Because as the rabbis would tell you, we are not biblically required to wear a four-cornered garment. It's not a biblical requirement. It's actually a rabbinical requirement. And so sometimes you can kind of tell the rabbis to, you know, bugger off a little bit and leave you alone. But I don't wear a four-cornered garment because it's not something that, it's just not something I do. I do have a talit that I use when I go to pray and those sort of things. But when you wear the four-cornered garment, and this young man did, of course, you've got these fringes. And the purpose of these fringes then is to serve as a reminder, because it serves as a reminder of the things that are going on with regards to your behavior towards other people. It serves as a reminder how we're doing things. It serves as a reminder in the process of what we're doing. And that's, you know, what matters most in all of this. And it's what it's supposed to do. And so anyway, this young man found himself in a position which, I don't know, some people would argue is not all that important. It's not all that. He found himself visiting a prostitute for reasons that are his reasons, not mine. And so be it. But as he began to disrobe, as he began to get ready to do what you do with a prostitute, he found himself getting down to the last little bit there, and he found the tzitzit. He found the reminders of how he's supposed to behave and how he's supposed to live his life a certain way and be a certain thing in a certain place in a certain, you know, he's supposed to be holy because God is holy. And he's supposed to treat other people the way he would want to be treated. And the fact of the matter is that there's this element here of we don't always treat women the way we're supposed to, I guess is what we're saying. And when you're dealing with prostitutes, and I know this is going to sound weird, I'm going to say it, but it's going to sound weird. I've been there. Not to visit with prostitutes, but I mean, the seminary I went to was dead set in the worst part of Atlanta. I mean, it was just, it was Skid Row. It was prostitute central. And so here we are, a bunch of these religious students, and right outside our gate, literally, we talk to them every day. We walk by them. Our hookers on Stewart Street in Atlanta, which is no longer Stewart Street, so don't look for it. But it was an interesting scenario. And I remember several of the conversations with him. And I guess what I was most impressed with, one of them at one point said to me, you know why I like talking to you? Because you talk to me like I'm a person. And maybe people who go to prostitutes, men who go to prostitutes, don't treat them that way. I don't know. Never been, so I don't know. I do know that this young man, as he reached his zitzit and he's taking off the little talit, he realizes this is not the appropriate behavior. And so he quickly dresses and leaves. And that's what the tzitzit are supposed to do. They're supposed to remind you all the time, 24/7, of what is expected and what you're supposed to be doing. And that's important. Mike Pence, excuse me, has his rule in place for basically the same reason. You can see it if you want as discriminatory and mean towards women and whatever, but in his view, that's not what it is. In his view, it's a reminder of how he's supposed to behave because this is what he does. This is what he believes. This is what he feels. This is what he wants his behavior to be. And yet somehow or another that gets turned into, well, you're being mean to me because you're not willing to put yourself in a compromising position with me. Even though maybe I don't have any intentions of anything like that, but somehow or another, it always seems to work out that way, doesn't it? You get into these situations and you end up with he said, she said. And what recourse do you have at that point? The rabbis also teach that the tzitzit, which are only worn by men, were only worn by men at one point. Now it's a little more liberal than that. But because as the rabbis put it, the feminine soul has no need of them. It's the male soul that misbehaves, that gets off the beaten path, that does things that are not in keeping with the tenets of the Torah. And so we need those to remind ourselves of those things that we believe, that we say we believe, that we act like we're supposed to act like we believe, that matter to us. You get the point here? And I'm wondering, in our society today, and I realize most of you are not Jewish, and I get that, but every faith tenet has those, let's just call them fringes, let's just call them tzitzits. Every faith tenet has those ideas and has those beliefs of how people should behave properly, and why they should behave properly, and how it reflects upon their faith and their construct of God, whatever that might be. And even if you're not, I mean, I get in this argument all the time about, moral. You don't have to be religious to be moral. Okay. Well, even those people have some form of guidance, right? And I keep thinking to myself, what if the real problem in our world today is we're hiding our tzitzit? They're not. Nobody can see it. Your tzitzit aren't showing, right? So not only are they not reminding you of how you should be behaving and what you should be thinking and what you should be doing and how you should be presenting yourselves, they aren't showing to other people either, so they don't even know what to expect from you. That's part of it as well. If your tzitzit are showing, then I would assume that a woman who is not your wife would see that and know that it would probably, that you would consider it inappropriate to be in a room alone with her without somebody else watching. Whereas if you don't have them out, who knows what's assumed or what isn't assumed or what is not. It's important, I think, from a cultural standpoint, to recapture that. The idea that Mike Pence is mocked for his Billy Graham rule is pathetic. It's sad. It's systemic of what's, I guess, going wrong. I don't know. There's some element there that makes me uncomfortable. And you can bet that Ben and I will be discussing that this weekend. We will be having a conversation about why we wear tzitzit. And granted, I only wear them on Saturdays or special occasions, but the idea is still there. And I guess that's what matters. All right, we've got to take a break. Facebook. So you know how Facebook had that thing the other day and they were logging people out because you may have been caught. So apparently I got logged out of Facebook. It appears that the stream is still running. I can't see it, so I don't know. So after all of that, the problem that I have is with Facebook. So if you're in the chat room, I have no idea. I don't know what's going on. I'm just kind of hanging out and sharing what I have to say. All right, got to take a break. Back right after this.
This is the Podcast 99 Internet Radio Network. You are listening to The Dave Bowman Show on the Podcast 99 Internet Radio Network.
Hey, welcome back. This is I, Dave. Tuesday episode of Big Show. Text machine is open. Area code 209-565-DAVE. Email Dave at thedavebowmanshow.com. And of course, we're on the web, Facebook, Twitter, and thedavebowmanshow.com, which is also plausiblylive.com, but either one will get you to me. It's the same website, just two different names. You get the idea. So I have no idea. I just think it's funny because Facebook put out that thing about we're logging people out, and I didn't get logged out. So I thought, I'm pretty savvy about what I do with Facebook and what I don't. In fact, my move to get off of Facebook has been, I think, remarkably successful. Been doing it for about a week now. I have my own web page, which is Dave's Facebook page. Facebook without the Facebook. And so I post everything that I would normally post to Facebook there, and then I share it to Facebook so that Facebook cannot control my content or anything like that. And I do it with all my other stuff too. So I have a baseball page, I have a theology page, I have a history page, Dave Loves History. And they're all websites that then I feed back to there. And so that has worked well. But anyway, I didn't get logged out until I was in the middle of my show. Then I get logged out. Psst, out. You have to re-log back in. And I can't. If I log back in, I log back in, but I can't get back to the control studio as opposed to the live broadcast, which I'm told is still running. Because if I do, then I get the double audio feed, and you don't want that. Nobody wants to hear that. So I don't really know what's going on in the chat room. If you guys are having fun, behave, be nice, treat each other with respect, okay? Because I can't be there to bitch slap anybody that needs to be bitch slapped. So there you go. The political right, Victor David Hansen, for one thing, seems to have come to believe that there's going to be a second American Revolution. Have you seen this happening? I've been seeing this for a while. I remember back in the radio days, there were people who would call the show on a fairly regular basis and proclaim that they were ready for the next revolution. They wanted to get this started. And I always kind of poo-pooed that with, you know, okay, you don't really believe that. You haven't really thought that through very well, and you haven't really considered all the aspects and angles of that. Because I think most people have not really, they think of the Civil War, the original one, in rather archaic terms. They think of it in rather romantic terms, I guess. That's what Robert E. Lee once said. It's a good thing the war is so bad, because if it wasn't, people would actually believe that stuff. They used to sing songs, march off the war, hey, everything's great. Until the stench of an actual battlefield really got to them and they started realizing, hey, this kind of sucks. And then you had the added element of family against family, brother against brother, uncle against uncle, in some cases, father against son. My own family in our history was pretty divided. The Holts that were on the Texas side of things, the Texas side of the line, pretty much fought for the Confederacy. The Holts that were on the Arkansas side of the line did not. They fought for the Union. My great-grandfather, yes, my great-grandfather, not my great-great-grandfather, not my great-great-great-grandfather, my great-grandfather, Francis Marion Holt, was a Union cavalry trooper during the Civil War. He was from the southernmost part of Arkansas, which was a deep, deep Union area. I mean, it really was, primarily because they were, you know, basically poor farmers who, you know, had a lot in common with the oppressed and the slaves, and they didn't see the idea of owning another human being as being all that great of an idea, and it certainly wasn't worth breaking up the Union about. So anyway, my great-grandfather fought for the Union, while his cousins and at least one of his brothers fought for the Confederacy. And we don't really grasp today, because again, we see the Civil War in this romantic notion. Well, we don't grasp the destruction of this war. We don't think about what it means when Sherman says, I'm going to burn your town to the ground, because that's how, you know, if you'll surrender today, if you'll stop this war today, I won't do it. But since you won't, I'm going to eliminate your ability to make war. And so he burns the town of Atlanta to the ground. Now, again, today we look at that and go, well, Atlanta's like the biggest city in the South. What is it? 3 million people or something like that. Yeah, it wasn't that during the Civil War. Was basically a railroad junction, and that was pretty much, wasn't even the capital then of either the South or of the state of Georgia. We have this, again, romanticized notion of it. So I'm always intrigued by people who say we're headed for the second Civil War. The problem with that argument, of course, is that it feeds into, and it feeds from, I guess, and then feeds right back into it. It forms its own feedback loop, as it were, into this ridiculous notion that we've never been more divided. We've never had such differences between our people. We've never had these problems before. And so now that we do have these problems, the only solution might be to shoot at each other. You know, and when you look at it in that terms, when you step back and think about it in those ways, I guess you kind of realize how ridiculous that actually is. And there are a lot of people I disagree with politically. There are a lot of people I like that I disagree with politically. Not on everything. I mean, there are some things. I think that there are some things that everybody agrees on. We've just locked ourselves into this culture that says if you disagree on anything, you have to scream and yell at the other person and you can't possibly like them. No, you must not. For if you do, I don't know what the problem is. I really don't. At any rate, there are a lot of people I disagree with that I like. But I'm not willing to shoot them because we disagree. And I would hope that they're not willing to shoot at me because we disagree on everything. On anything, for that matter. Throughout history of humanity, religion has caused these kinds of conflicts. Well, I believe Jesus had long hair. I believe he had short hair. You know why? Because short hair is what's wrong. Well, no, Jesus must have had long hair because he was this, that. Remember, that was an actual argument back in the 70s. As much as people disagreed about that, I don't think they were willing to shoot at each other about that. Now, there have been religious cases where people are willing to shoot at each other and throw bombs at each other and cut people's heads off and that sort of thing. But as a general rule of thumb, here in the United States, we really haven't had that issue, and hopefully we never will. When you look at the Civil War, really, what it came down to one issue. It came down to the singular issue of slavery. I know states' rights, people try to tell me it's not. Well, what state right were you trying to defend? The right to own other people. That's it. Those aren't my words. Go read the words of the Articles of Succession that these states passed. You're trying to take our slaves away. And we don't want that. We believe we have a right to own people. Okay. And they were willing to shoot at other people for that. I don't know that there's a right in this country right now. I mean, are pro-choice people willing to shoot at pro-life people to defend the right to have an abortion? Are pro-life people willing to shoot at pro-choice people to stop the right to have an abortion? I mean, I'm anti-abortion, but I'm not willing to shoot anybody over it. I know there's a nutball here and there. Don't take those guys out of the equation, please. Take the Eric Rudolphs out of the equation. Take the Kermit, whatever that doctor's name was in Philadelphia, out of the equation. We're talking about reasonable, rational people here, because again, if there is a second civil war, who's going to be fighting it? Right? Who's going to be, you're going to be expecting people like me and like you to be out there on the front lines like we were in the original Civil War, to raise our hands and volunteer for Abe Lincoln's 300,000. We are coming, Father Abram, 300,000 more. You never heard that song? That's the kind of thing we used to sing here in this country. They're going to be expecting people like you and I to fight it. And quite frankly, I'm not really all that excited about fighting a war and shooting at other people for reasons that I don't think are necessary. And I think that most Americans are feeling the same way. I think probably 99% of Americans feel the same way. There is nothing so divisive in this country today that I think it's worth shooting over. Do you? If you do, I can't see the chat room again, so email me or text me. 209-565-DAVE is the text machine. Email Dave at thedavebowmanshow.com and explain to me why. Explain to me what you think is worth shooting over at this point today as things stand right now. I'm not saying in the future there won't be something that isn't worth fighting for or worth standing up for. That's not what I'm saying. What I'm saying right now today, Victor David Hansen, we're on the verge of a second civil war. The problem is one of degree, I think. In the 1850s and 1860s, the singular issue that divided this country was slavery. On the one side, you had a lot of people who believed that you could own human beings. And on the other side, you had a bunch of abolitionists, people who believed that you should not have the right to own another person because, well, frankly, that's evil. And even if it weren't evil, the treatment that the slaves are having is inhumane. So where are we going with this? And I get it. Slavery has been throughout history. I was bemused. You know, we didn't talk about it at the time, but I was really bemused by Booker's This is my Spartacus moment comment, because the idea of someone who politically has the beliefs that he has saying that at that particular point was bemusing to me. And if you don't really understand why, then you don't really understand history. There's truths there that Cory Booker doesn't understand, but he's out there saying it anyway. Be that as it may, you had these two, this dividing line that was extreme in the country. And you had what we would call a virtuous public engaged in the debate. We had Congress debating him, and we had the Compromise of 1850. We had the Kansas thing. We had all this stuff going on that really the entirety of the country was involved with. In the 1860s, you would be hard pressed to find an American citizen and even non-citizen who wasn't cognizant of what was going on. You don't have that today. You don't have that dividing line today. The truth of the matter is that our voting shows that we're not interested. It shows that we're not intrigued by it. There's a reason why politicians and government are so concerned with registrations as opposed to voter turnout. Even as voter registrations go up, 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 turnout goes down, 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 down. Why? Because the people aren't engaged. They don't care. What they're seeing doesn't motivate them and doesn't concern them enough to actually get involved. There's no singular issue in the country right now worthy of that kind of involvement. Even the people who hate Trump. I mean hate Trump. I mean who think that Trump is Satan incarnate. Right? Well, at least they thought that since 2016 or 2015, really. But prior to that, they didn't care. Even those people, there are not that many of them. Just like there's not that many on the right who are so engaged that Trump is everything and Obama is terrible and blah, blah, blah. The vast majority of the American public is far more concerned with what, the chef is making on MasterChef tonight. Who's playing in the game? What time is dinner? What's the new pizza from the local pizza place the vast majority of American people are not engaged. They don't care. And with that kind of mentality, how do you convince those people that something is worth shooting over? That something is worth going over to their neighbor's house and banging on the door and when they come out, blasting them with a shotgun? You're not going to do that. And then you have the additional element of you don't have any regional issue with this. I mean, even California, which is the bluest of blue states, has a significant amount of purple in it, far more than California would admit to. Jerry Brown this week vetoed a bill to allow ban smoking on public beaches and public parks. That's a bill I would be in favor of because I hate smoking. As libertarian as I am in my feelings, if I could work one thing, it would be that smoking would be forever and permanently banned. Unless you're in a closed loop environment. Smoke to your heart's content. If you're in your car with your windows up, I don't know why smokers have to lower their windows. I don't get that. If it's so great, keep it in your car, but they don't. And they're all slobs. All of them. Don't even send me the text saying, no, we're not. You're getting that. You're all slobs. Hell, I was in Yellowstone National Park the other day, a month or so ago, and I'm in, a 10,000-foot mountain pass, and I'm going to the little restroom there, and I come out of the restroom, and what do I see all over the ground? Cigarette butts. And all of this beauty. At any rate, I'm sorry there. Sorry for my anti-smoking blaze as I go off on a rant there. The point is you don't have this sectional division like you had in the 1860s. You don't have an area of the country, even like I said, even California isn't as divided as it believes it is, isn't as blue as it believes it is, but it's also not as red as it wants to be. But the point is, you had a whole portion of the country where one thing, one state rat was legal, and they wanted to protect that way of life. Which, by the way, that way of life included constantly carrying a weapon because you were afraid the slaves were going to revolt. I'm not making that up. Yet another entire part of the country that driven by abolitionist ideas, believed that this was wrong. And sure, there were people in both sections, my great-grandfather being one of them, that didn't agree with those things, but they weren't the vast majority. They were a very small minority. And because you had this sectional difference, it was easier, in most cases, it was easier to define, you know, who the other side was. Today, you don't have that. I got 1, 2, 3, 4, 5, 6, 7, 8, 9, 10. I get about 12 neighbors around me. And just based on conversations that we've had standing out in the cul-de-sac here, I can tell you that probably 50% of them politically would not agree with me on anything. Even if we agree our kids are having a great time in the cul-de-sac they're playing, if politics came up, it would quickly devolve into an argument. So what are we supposed to do? You know, because house. What are we supposed to do? Draw lines between us all here and draw that up for a second civil war? No, thanks. Are we divided? Yeah, we are, but we're not engaged. And division without engagement is not the seed for a civil war. But that should cause us concern, too, the fact that we're not engaged. The fact that so many people believe that it doesn't matter. This fact that so many people look at it and go, well, my vote doesn't count. My voice doesn't matter. My engagement isn't going to change anything. I can't do anything. I can't make it better or worse or anything like that is not endemic to creating a civil war, but it is endemic to creating a bureaucratic tyranny. It is our willingness to allow our government, whoever is running it, and it doesn't matter, to continue to run roughshod over our lives and to continue to inject itself into every element in every corner of our world, to tax everything they can possibly tax. Don't get me started on that one today, is emblematic of the fact that there's no way we could end up with a civil war because we don't even care about those things. What's the issue that's going to have us shooting at each other in the streets and in the hills and the valleys and all of that stuff? And by the way, whose side is the army going to be on? It's ludicrous to argue that there's going to be a second civil war. It simply buys into the myth that we've never been more divided, which I have said over and over again is a myth. Anybody who tells you we've never been more divided knows nothing, and I mean nothing, of American history. We were far more divided in the 60s. We were far more divided in 1917. We were divided in the 50s. Far more divided, obviously, in the 1860s, and even all the way back to 1788 when they're ratifying the Constitution, we were divided. Far more divided than we are now. By the way, on July 4th of 1788, in case you've missed that episode of Constitution Thursday, there were people who were willing to shoot at other people because they believed the Constitution should be ratified, and they didn't. And they marched in with a 1,000-man militia ready to shoot at them. So this idea that we're never been more divided is—it's purposeful. I believe it's born out of naivete, but it's also born out of this need to have a division. We need to be more divided because if we're more divided, then we have to have a solution. We have to solve that problem. And how do we solve that problem? The only solutions I've heard for solving the we're more divided problem is you need to shut up. You can't have that opinion because if you have that opinion, well, not going to allow that. That's just not going to work. And that's what it comes down to today. So the lessons for today, make sure your tzitzit are showing and that you're living the life that you should be living. And number two, don't buy the myth that we've never been more divided, because we have been. And anybody that tells you we've never been more divided, the only reason they're telling that is because they want you to shut up. That's it. That's the only reason they're saying that. We've been far more divided. And when somebody tells you, we're going to have a second civil war, no, we're not. Not only are we not going to have a second civil war, but who's going to shoot at who for that? I mean, start asking those kind of questions and see what kind of answers you get, because I'm pretty sure the answers that you get will not be answers that they really want to think about. It's just not possible, because that's how things work. Anyway. There you go. So quick note of interest. ConstitutionThursday.com is the website for Constitution Thursday. just that element of the show all the way back to the beginning in 2010. What I hadn't noticed was a couple of years ago, our ISP changed some things in how they were doing stuff, and it changed the address. It actually changed the URLs. The old URLs were supposed to continue to work. I was assured that they would, but they didn't. Hey, stuff happens. It's no big deal. But what I didn't notice was that the Constitution Thursday website was the one that was probably the most affected by that because it was the oldest and the one that I had had the least conversion to the new systems with. So new systems, they're now 4 years old. At any rate, over the weekend, I was able to fix the Constitution Thursday, the Saturday podcast section. Still working on some of the others. But by request, I think it was it Buster? Somebody asked me to do that. It was either Buster or Dan. I don't remember right now. Anyway, they asked me to fix that. I think it was Buster. So we fixed the Saturday podcast one, so you can now listen to them and download them at ConstitutionThursday.com. So those were good shows. With Chatroom Jeff and Pat the Lawyer, we had a good time producing those and putting those together. And I kind of wish we were still doing it. But alas, we are not. Times change, and we change with them. Got to get running. Take the time right now. Tell the people that matter in your life you love them very much. You'd miss them if they weren't there. So don't pass up those opportunities. You do not want to have that regret. Plausibly Live, I'm Dave Bowman. This is my show. We do it every Monday through Friday at 10 a.m. Pacific. It's called The Dave Bowman Show, or Plausibly Live if you're listening to it on podcast. And you can find that at thedavebowmanshow.com as well as podcast99.org, where you can also find Tim and Jay and the Ale Evangelist and all the great shows we have for you there at podcast99.org. Have a wonderful day, everybody. I'm going to rest my voice. It's gone. It's shot. I'm going to rest my voice the rest of the day, and we will see you tomorrow for a Wednesday episode of The Dave Bowman Show, right here on the Podcast 99 Internet Radio Network.
Bowman Show is a Slippery Fish Entertainment production for the Podcast 99 Internet Radio Network. For more information or to complain about how the show offended you, the text or voicemail number is 209-565-DAVE. For more information about the show, log on to thedavebowmanshow.com.
Hey, I'm going to go do something productive. I'm going to go watch television.